Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
And go. Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab, and today?
It's inheritance today.
Yeah, we're exploring questions of like, what can you pass down to your kids and their kids? What can't you? How much of you will echo into the future, and how much of you won't? Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, I'm feeling pretty good about this show so far.
Because?
Well, if a mother, a rat mother, licking her baby can have such a profound effect, basically change the expression of the genes in the baby. Well, that's
so you think you can get deep down.
Look, in the end, what do I know? But I take it that we have more control over our destinies and our kids' destinies than we would have thought.
Well, let's not get too excited too fast, because we have a story to tell, and this tale leaves me a little queasy.
Oh, there was a contact.
Hello.
Yep. It's me, Ole.
This is Ulla.
Hi, Ulla Bygren. I'm in public health.
He works at the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, where he studies population data.
Looking for patterns in cardiovascular diseases, high blood pressure and such.
But the story he told us begins around 25 years ago.
Way up in northern Sweden.
That's Sam Keen again. He's the guy who told us about Ulla's work.
In a little community called Overkalix.
What does it look like? Like, is it a big town, a little village?
Yeah, it's a small forest area. Very beautiful.
But this was a really, really tough place to grow up.
Very isolated and very
cold.
Are you near the Arctic Circle or?
North of it.
North of the Arctic Circle?
Yeah.
Oh.
My home village was 10 miles north of the Polar Circle.
Oh, so you grew up in Overkalix?
Yeah, yeah. We had an expression here, dig where you stand.
And it just so happens this town is a perfect place to dig.
Okay, I'm here. Riksarkivet. The Kingdom Archive.
Because there is more data, more information about the people of Overkalix going farther back into the past than you could find almost anywhere else on Earth.
Yeah, we are really data rich.
This is the Overkalix church parish record.
Yes, it is.
Because here's the thing, the churches up in Overkalix kept incredibly detailed records. We actually sent our friend Pike Malinowski to the archives in Stockholm to check it out.
It says register. Register.
In those books, you can read everything about the citizens of Overkalix, going back hundreds of years.
What's his name?
You know, their names.
Jens Olof, Anna Kajsa, Henrik Wenberg.
What year they were born?
1814.
1881.
She was born 1904, and this is...
Everything happening in the family.
Is in these books.
Nilsson, he was an idiot.
He was an idiot.
Sorry.
What does that mean, he was an idiot? I guess...
Yeah, he was, you know, retarded.
Right.
Yeah. Eländig att skåda. He was miserable to look at.
It's not very politically correct, huh?
No.
In any case, these books tell you when each of these folks died, how they died.
From disease.
Heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
From pneumonia.
Or accident.
She drowned.
Oh, my God.
A lot of diagnosis, actually.
Influenza.
Cancer. Heart disease. Brain disease.
And interestingly, the churches also kept track of the farmers'
crops
and livestock.
How much they were growing each year.
Which turned out to be kind of an interesting thing to look at, because
the
people in Overkalix who were farming,
trying to eke a living out of the soil.
And here we have how much they harvested.
They would experience these wild changes from harvest to harvest.
What you see in the records is that one year,
potatoes.
Crops would do great.
100 liters. Wow, that's a lot of potatoes.
A few years later, there'd be a harsh winter. And
the crops failed. Mm.
And when the crops failed...
Famines.
Yeah.
So sad.
They basically starve. I mean, when you look at the records, you don't see huge spikes in mortality.
So they didn't starve to death.
But they suddenly had to get by on a tiny fraction of the food that they were used to.
They didn't have grains. I mean, they didn't have porridge.
And so they just had to hold on for the entire winter.
But then a few years would pass. Crops would bounce back.
But we have a lot more grain here, yeah. I think.
And suddenly...
plenty of food.
They could eat twice, three times as much.
But then...
oh no.
Total crop failure.
Famine again. And these changes would just bounce back and forth.
Feast.
Famine.
Feast.
Famine.
And feast again.
And looking at these swings in fortune, Ulla realized what he had here was...
a nice natural experiment.
Because with all this data, he and his team could follow families forward in time, through the generations.
So if they saw somebody who was starving as a kid in 1820, they could then see, well, when those people had children and grandchildren, did anything change? Were there any consequences?
They wanted to see basically the effects of starvation on multiple generations.
What did you discover?
Well, it was very interesting discovery.
Well, it's a little odd, actually. Here's what Ulla says he found in the data. If you were a boy in Overcalix between the ages of 9 and 12 years old, so that's the window, 9 to 12, you're a boy, and then we have one of those terribly rough winters, and you're eating much less than normal, assuming that you can survive the ordeal, and you grow up, and you have kids of your own, the data seems to say that your kids will benefit from your suffering.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll do better?
If you have a starving daddy, it turns out that the baby actually gets some sort of health benefit.
Really?
Yeah.
And these effects, in fact, were so strong that you could trace it to the grandfather.
The grandfather? Oh, two generations?
It seemed to have been passed down from multiple generations.
You mean if you had a starving grandfather, you would be a healthier boy because you had a starving grandfather?
You got a health boost if you had a starving grandfather.
What sort of health boost?
Well,
Ulla told us, take heart disease.
Cardiovascular disease.
He said if you were a boy and you starved between the ages of 9 and 12, and then you went on to become a father... then a grandfather. Your grandkids?
They were protected.
Meaning that they had less incidence of heart disease?
Much less.
How much less?
Well, it's one-fourth then, can we say.
One-fourth?
Let me say this again. If you're a starving boy between 9 to 12 years old, now it doesn't matter a whole lot what happens to you after this, your grandchildren will have one-quarter the risk of heart disease than if you were eating a whole lot between 9 and 12. One-quarter.
Not only that, apparently those grandkids were
less prone to diabetes. They lived longer lives, something like 30 years on average. This was a really, really big effect.
Instead of dying at 40, I'd live to 70? That kind of 30 years?
Yes, exactly.
I wonder, it's such a surprising result. I wonder how much you believe in it.
The results are there. It's only the mechanisms are not so clear.
But the results are very clear. The results are obvious to you.
The results are quite obvious.
Just to be sure, we asked Frances Champagne what she thinks of this data.
I believe it.
Oh, you do?
And Michael Meany as well.
I think the Swedish data are really, really strong and very reliable.
Everybody we talk to seems to think there's something really interesting going on here. But what exactly, maybe you can explain this to me, Robert. What exactly happens between 9 to 12 that makes this big difference?
Well, so here's the thing. How old are your boys right now?
3 and 8 months.
Okay. So here's what you're going to notice. Your boys will first grow taller and taller for the next few years. Mm-hmm. And when they get to be about 9, 10 years old, they're going to stop growing just for a few years.
This is what's called the slow growth period.
Just for those years, that's 9, 10, 11.
Just before puberty.
They won't grow much on the outside, but on the inside?
That is the time when the sperms are developing.
What's happening during this time is that you're setting aside the stock of cells that you're going to draw on in the future to make sperm cells.
So they are pre-sperms.
So the thought is, when those little boys in Overcalix were really, really hungry, their hunger started a chemical process that reached all the way down to the DNA inside the boy's sperm.
Something happens on the molecular level.
What exactly?
Well, the DNA, the RNA, microRNAs, histone.
Hey, wait, that's you're just renaming it.
Methylations, phosphorylations, and so on.
This is just judo. That's all this is.
Truth is, we don't know precisely how this happens, but somehow the experience of starvation marks the DNA. Maybe like those methyl things we were telling you about with the rats.
Yeah.
Telling some genes to turn off now, other genes to turn on. And the incredible thing is, those marks stick around.
The sperm carries these marks to the next generation.
And then the next one after that.
Right.
So somehow, by some kind of chemical mechanism, starving grandpa, back when he was about 9 to 12 years old, turned out to be a good thing.
So it's like grandpa's struggle is sort of jumping forward and giving me a leg up.
Well, that's the good news, but unfortunately, there is some bad news here.
Yeah.
If your grandpa didn't starve, instead he lived through great times. He stuffed himself silly 9, 10, 11 years old. So he's a happy grandpa. You, the grandson, you then would have
high frequencies of heart attacks. As to diabetes, it was a fourfold risk.
Fourfold, 400% greater?
Yeah.
I gotta say, this is spooky. This is spooky because
It does get.
I mean, it's like, what if grandpa has a bad day? Suddenly you're marked.
Yeah.
Frankly, this makes being 9, 10, 11, 12 like a rather crucial.
And at a time when you're not making the best decisions anyway.
Yeah, because grandpa's just 9.
I should add, too, they have found very similar effects for smoking, for instance. If you start smoking when you're, 10, 11, something like that, you end up having children with more problems.
I initially felt very hopeful and excited about this research because it seems to suggest that one body can respond to an environment and change and be flexible in a way we didn't think was possible. But this stuff you're telling me about Sweden feels very grim in a certain way.
Although, sometimes your grandfather's suffering helps you.
Even if it helps, it's horrifying. It makes me claustrophobic.
You feel kind of hemmed in by what your grandfather did?
A little bit.
I guess the way I would look at it is that you can change your environment a lot more easily than you can change your genes.
I think what's weird here is that we started trying to make a difference in our children, and now we're surprise attacked by our grandparents.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do though. When Emil gets to be 8. I'm cutting him off. He's not eating it at all.
This may hurt you, my son, but I'm doing it for my grandchildren.
Thanks to Ulla Bigrian, reporter Pike Malinowski, and
Karin Borgqvist-Jung, and I'm a senior archivist at the National Archive in Marieberg in Stockholm.
Hello, this is Sam Keen.
My name is Gene Keen. I'm Sam Keen's dad.
Radiolab is produced by WNYC
and distributed by NPR.
Bye. Bye.
End of message.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.